There we go.
Hello, hello.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. Once again, you might notice that's not our usual call-in number. That's our voicemail line. We are on tour. We are reaching sort of the end of our tour. This is the second to last show, and we are in Skokie, Illinois. How are you guys doing?
Yeah!
We made it to Chicago.
Yeah, we are at the Chicago Ethical Humanist Society. We have Lisa and Steve with us. Lisa Crowe is the chair of the publicity committee for the Chicago Ethical Humanist Society. She is a former board member and vice president of the Chicago Ethical Humanist Society. Lisa is currently raising third-generation ethical humanists. How are you doing, Lisa?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Great. And Steve Gilstrom is a board member and past president of the organization. How are you?
Feeling good today.
Great. So one of the things that I talked about in St. Louis is... the Ethical Society, honestly, I've only heard... the only reason I knew about it before going on the tour was because James Croft said something about it. Other than that, this was sort of a blank space for me in sort of understanding the branching tree of freethought organizations. So can you tell us a little bit about the history of the Ethical Society?
Yeah, we'll try not to go too long-winded with this, but...
That's fine.
it actually dates back quite a ways. The original ethical culture movement, which is what it's really has grown out of, was founded in about 1877 or 8, some year about then, by Felix Adler.
Okay.
Now, Felix Adler was actually the son of a rabbi. He was born in Germany, but he came when he was 6 to New York so his father could be the rabbi at a major temple in New York.
Mm-hmm.
He studied at Columbia University, then continued at Heidelberg, but was exposed to some different ideas on his way to becoming a rabbi, not the least of which was that perhaps you could be moral without all these religious beliefs. He actually came back from there and was delivering his first sermon to his father's congregation, which was essentially for the purpose of introducing him to the congregation so that he could eventually take his father's place. The sermon didn't go over very well. He seemed to have forgotten to mention God.
Uh-oh.
So his whole point was that this was not a necessary concept. So that was his first and last sermon. At his father's congregation.
That's a pretty fantastic career if you think about it.
But not long after that, he did go in different directions, and he essentially founded what we now call the ethical culture movement.
Okay.
And his point with all that was that to advance the whole idea of diversity in the creed, unanimity in the deed, that is the practical religion from which a nun dissents. That is the platform broad enough and solid enough to receive the worshiper and the infidel. This is that common ground where we may all grasp hands as brothers, united in mankind's common cause.
I think a lot of freethinkers can get behind that.
I think
for sure.
So.
And we've heard that deed, not creed, several times, sort of around in our tours. Is that something that really defines the Chicago community as well?
Well, we like to think so, certainly. some of these things are easier in theory than practice.
Yeah.
But certainly the idea of not having the creedal dogma is sort of fundamental to that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, looking back at the history there, certainly I think Felix Adler saw this as more of an ecumenical type movement where all sorts of religious backgrounds would come to common ground for the common good. We could actually list several of the very early societal benefits that they really worked on, such as founding basically the Visiting Nurses Association, which actually Lisa may talk about a bit more in a minute. They started initial free kindergartens for working children, the working poorest children, basically, which eventually evolved into an ethical culture Fieldston school in New York. Felix Adler was very much involved in the National Labor Committee, the original forerunner of the American Civil Liberties Union,
yeah.
National Urban League, etc. So this was very much the idea of deed.
Right.
But not to be separated by those things that push us apart.
But we have, you know, free speech, secularism, basically all the things that are the underpinnings of the modern atheist movement are somewhere in that list of things that the ethical culture was involved with.
Definitely. I mean, one thing that makes us different is that we're not in the business of telling people what to believe. We're in the business of encouraging people to speak for themselves,
right,
and use critical thinking. And so we don't define ourselves as an atheist organization, as an agnostic organization. If you're an atheist or an agnostic or even a believer, you're welcome here. But I would think most believers are not going to find what they want,
right,
here, because we are dealing with life on earth and how we treat each other.
One of the things that I noticed in St. Louis, and they're probably not going to agree with me, but this is what I observed, was sort of, even though it said the word out on front, there was sort of a reticence to say humanist. or a secular humanist. And that seems to be a little different here, where humanist is in the name. So I guess, can you tell me about the interface between ethical culture and humanism?
Well, yes, I think there is a solid interface, yes. But I'll just mention that there are a couple of dozen various ethical societies throughout the country, mm-hmm. all under the umbrella of the American Ethical Union, whose headquarters are in New York. But there is some divergence among the different societies. I would say we are perhaps among the most secular.
Mm-hmm.
And what some of that can be observed in the name. Now, the original movement was the ethical culture movement, and many of the societies maintain the ethical culture in their name. Many of the societies, I'm not sure when this happened, at our society here actually made a name change to Ethical Humanist Society. And this was part, I think, of the outgrowth of the humanist movements in the 30s and on. And so by the 60s, somewhere around there, I think that change was made. But it was specifically for the purpose of emphasizing this sort of camaraderie with the humanist movement, which does tend to put you in a bit more of a secular direction.
Right.
I would also mention that we are actually a chapter of the American Humanist Association also.
Okay.
So American Humanist Association being explicitly non-theistic and,
well, one would assume,
secular humanist. I do see, though, that the website states that ethical humanism or ethical culture is designed to serve as a new religion or as an alternative to religion. Do you have, and a lot of atheists will sort of grouse at that, saying, I don't know if I would be comfortable calling this a religion. Do you sort of experience that tension within your society here?
I think I speak for a lot of people that we all struggle individually with the elevator speech. And it's a lot easier to say what we're not,
yeah,
than what we are. My husband from England, who grew up in Church of England, calls us decaffeinated religion, which I like very much. But, you know, our most of our brochures have a sort of something like this. The Ethical Humanist Society of Chicago is a democratic fellowship and spiritual home for those who seek a rational, compassionate philosophy of life without regard to belief or non-belief in a supreme being.
Yeah, even that word spiritual is sometimes a hot-button word for...
Being critical thinkers, we argue over everything.
Yeah. Well, there is sort of a weirdness. I know Sam Harris tries to reclaim the word spiritual. I'm one of those people who have a problem with it because of the base of the word. I know it's silly to not like a word because of where it comes from, because sometimes language evolves. But the base concept of spiritual is spirit, that it's coming from something supernatural, be it God or a ghost or something like that. But the idea that I think these ethical groups and Sam Harris talk about is what Carl Sagan described as the numinous, which is something that he tried to apply more broadly to both what religious people would call a spiritual thing or what we would call a moment, you know, a eureka moment or what a computer guy would say, a really, really neat hack. Or, you know, just those moments where we begin to see something underlying what we're doing. Is that kind of what you're talking about when you talk about spiritual?
Well, I think I'll sort of second what Lisa said, that this is one of those continual debates that people are in our own society are going to have different views on.
Yeah.
And I'll have to say I'm one of those people that also has a problem with the word spiritual about as much as I have the problem with the word faith. And again, we have different opinions within the society on this, but my own opinion on it is that I think it's a dangerous and unproductive thing to try to redefine religious words in ways that we find palatable.
Right.
I think it simply just confuses the issue, and I'd rather stay away from them. To me, faith has a very clear definition, belief in things that you have no reason to believe.
Right.
So I'd rather just stay away from those words and not try to redefine them to mean something like hope or something like this, or spiritual, try to redefine that in the sense of, I don't know, high school spirit for your football team or something.
Well, I had my problems with that, too. So
What you also find in this community is definitely a population of people who are not comfortable with atheist, the word atheist,
oh, yeah,
either. And I'm sure I'm not the first person saying this. But personally, I don't say I am an atheist. I say I'm an ethical humanist. And I think they're, you know, so everybody has emotional responses to certain words. I think based on how we were churched or non-churched when we were growing up, I think that's a big part of it.
So were you churched or non-churched, or where'd you fall down?
I was born into ethical humanism.
Okay.
Yep. I'm really an anomaly in a way.
Even among people who started out without religion, there's still that wide variance. And so starting on an ethical humanism, that's a unique culture. I mean, I've heard that you've experienced ethical society communities, you know, in New York and St. Louis and Chicago. What do you think distinguishes, you know, the different communities, and since we're here, explicitly Chicago?
Well, this is my first community as an adult.
Okay.
Because I experienced, I grew up in New York City. My parents were both from Jewish families. My mother's father was an Orthodox rabbi. Huh. My father was a Holocaust survivor. They wanted to find something where they could raise their children as critical thinkers without, neither one of them believed in God, but did not describe themselves as atheists. They found this, and my dad thought this is the best idea in the world. The New York Society, is just... It's sort of like the mothership, in a way.
That's not uncommon.
Because it was the first. So I grew up in this incredible building, auditorium, and I like to say I went to parochial school because I was in the ethical culture school 5 days a week.
And so this is a day school. This is a regular education, not a Sunday, not a Thursday afternoons. This is your regular secular education.
I believe it started as a free preschool way back when, but it, you know, evolved and morphed into an actual elementary school and then high school. But so I went to school 5 days a week there and then went to the Sunday school. So as a child, it's just normal. It's normal to you. The differences, St. Louis it was a wonderful community too, and that's where I spent my teenage years. Mm-hmm. And I graduated from the Sunday school there.
Okay.
So a lot of similarities with a lot of the people there. I'd say more regional differences just in the people rather than
differences you'd find anywhere because they're different locations. Okay, I get that. I have to admit, a humanist parochial school, as you were. we might as well talk about candy falling out of rainbows and other. It just seems like it's one. It's an alien concept, but it's a pleasant alien concept. What does a humanist parochial school look like? I guess from the inside, it's fine.
Well, now I have to remember what it was like to be 10 years old again. That's not easy.
Okay.
But I do want to note that it is no longer a part of the American Ethical Union.
Okay.
It is now a private institution, and I can't speak to when that changed. I believe it's still privately funded.
Okay.
Not publicly funded. But, we had classrooms. We had amazing, amazing stuff. And, of course, this was the 60s, and, there was more money. Now, my sister and I got in on scholarship. My parents did not. Pay for us to go. It's expensive.
Yeah.
You don't get in there on scholarship. At least it was.
I find it interesting because one of the things that we both work on, actually, Becky is very much involved with Camp Quest Northwest. I occasionally do things with Camp Quest Northwest. And it's an absolutely necessary component to this new movement, I think. But it's interesting to discover that we're sort of we're going over ground that we've kind of lost in a way, that we were already kind of there. The 70s and 80s intervened, and now we kind of have we're still kind of rebuilding, and that's a sad concept a little bit, I have to admit. But
well one thing that I'm noticing is this is Ethical Culture Society stems from something in the late 1800s, and it was started by a disillusioned rabbinical student. You had the Society for Humanistic Judaism, which was let's take God out of religion.
So feeling a little bit of resonance there, Becky?
Definitely. I'm noticing these similarities and sort of seeing these cycles of resurgence. It's really showing that the free thought movement and the non-religious movements in America, are not only the new atheists of the millennial age.
Yeah. Well, there have been new atheists for as long as there have been atheists, to be honest. So, Steve, speaking of atheism, you identified as an atheist far longer than an ethical humanist. What brought you to that? I guess it's not really a change. You just added some new words on. So what brought you to that?
Well, okay, becoming an atheist was not a big deal because I was a teenager, and what teenager isn't an atheist anyway? And nothing terrible about religion. I started to think about things, and I liked science, and I liked engineering and stuff, and God didn't seem to have any relevance to any of this stuff. So
Right. Becoming
an atheist was not any problem at all. Actually, I might even redefine myself a little more closely as an apatheist.
Okay. I can appreciate that,
which doesn't need further definition.
And my brother is one, actually. He actually identifies as one.
We're seeing some nods in the audience here.
Just basically, if you can't find any evidence one way or another out in the real world, what difference does it make?
Right.
But I would say the turning point as far as becoming involved again in some organization was many years later. I was married, and some years after that, And by the way, married to an atheist, that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she's from Latin America, where, of course, everyone is Catholic, right?
Yeah.
But not. But we had kids. And I think one of the things that sort of triggered us was the friendly family next door, a Mexican family that our kids played with all the time, when one of the boys says to my son that basically he's going to go to hell because he doesn't believe in God.
Oh, yay.
Now, I'm sure many people have stories like this. But we realized that it would be good if our among the circle of friends for our kids, they also had friends from secular families. And I think it was my wife who actually found the Ethical Humanist Society, probably from an advertisement in Parent magazine. And we joined and have been coming ever since. And that was about 14 years ago. And our kids are in college now. And I think firmly ensconced in critical thinking.
What a good vector for sort of bringing in families and raising awareness is Parent Magazine. You know, we hear so much that say, well, I only joined a church because I had kids, or people say, oh, you'll fall away from religion or from the church or from the synagogue, but as soon as you get married and have kids, then we know you'll come on back. So how did you just sort of, whose brainchild was that to say, oh, let's just put a little ad in Parent Magazine? Are you familiar with that at all, with that process?
Well, I was going to let Lisa's on publicity, so I thought I might let her speak to that. But.
Wake up. I believe one of us just researched it, and we were looking for a way to, I think I came here after they started placing the ads, but it just seemed like a great idea. And so we did it, and we started getting families who saw it.
So before we go into the break, I do have one question. So you guys have a really nice building that you I assume you do the ethical culture and the humanism stuff in. Was this a purpose-built structure for the ethical culture movement, or
half and half?
Half and half. Okay.
Now, as I was saying, the Chicago Ethical Society has existed since 1882.
Yeah.
The second ethical society in the country, but didn't have a permanent home or permanent building up until the mid to late 90s.
Oh, wow.
And they met in various places. But at that time, and frankly, we will say this, we're very thankful to Faith and Gordon Greiner, who left an endowment specifically so we could have a home. And so the older part of the building, which we're not in right now, was purchased at that time and converted and used that way for several years. And then I think perhaps 8 years ago, something like that, the auditorium, very nice auditorium that we're in now, was added on specifically for this function. So it's a half and half building, but we're very happy with it.
Very cool.
I would be too. It's just fantastic to have a physical home. It can really help build that community.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We go into a break. When we come back, we're talking to Brian Emmerich of Chicago Atheists.
Join the Ask an Atheist after party at Doyle's Public House. The Ask an Atheist crew will be there at 5 for good beers, food, and you're invited. You'll find a dozen beers on tap, including Stella, Guinness, Smithwick's Irish Ale, Twisted Thistle IPA, and Fuller's London Porter, as well as dozens of domestic and imported beers and bottles. Join us for good atheist conversation and meet the crew today at 5 at Doyle's, 208 St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. 99.97. And before we talk to Brian, I had a thought on the way here. I am from the Seattle area, but I don't actually drink coffee, believe it or not. Partly because it gives me heartburn, but also partly because I need, when I drink coffee, I have no way of modulating how much caffeine I'm taking in. If I make one pot of coffee, I have one pot of coffee, which is usually not a good idea. So I've taken to drinking energy drinks because I have one can and that's it. And I know I'm getting this much and I know it's shaving this much off of my life. But one of my problems with energy drinks is just the amount of pseudoscience involved with the packaging on those.
We encountered an excellent one.
Yeah. So
that was called bioactivated.
Yeah. There's this one that's basically a fake beer energy drink. It's got malt in it. I guess it's Zima without the alcohol, I guess. And it says in big bold letters at the bottom, bioactivated. And I try to read that. I read what it was, and as far as I can tell, it's energy drink marketing speak for warning, contains atoms.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm thinking, we need a skeptical energy drink. Well, okay, I need a skeptical energy drink, and I'm trying to wondering what would make a skeptical energy drink, and on the way here, I had an idea. What you do is you have an energy drink, basically a soda with a lot of caffeine and sugar, and then one other ingredient, be it the guarana or whatever, and the
guarana berry extract, yeah, and the taurine,
all the things,
caffeine
that are apparently usually in dog food but not people food. And it's behind a piece of paper, so you can't see it on the can, but you're still fulfilling the FDA requirements of saying what's in the drink. And then you drink it without knowing what the secret ingredient is, and then you go to a website and report your findings.
I would love this idea, Sam.
Somebody with money, help me do this, because I think this would be great. But that's the idea. And then we have to sort of make sure it's double blind. What I would like to do is make it that you can either know what the secret ingredient is, or you can go to the website. Like, I don't know how I would do that. Some engineering would be involved. Maybe with quantum tunneling. Joining us now is Brian Emmerich. He's a member of the Chicago Atheists Meetup Group and is a political organizer for the Secular Party of America, formerly known as the National Atheist Party. How you doing today?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing really well. So I am originally from the Chicago area, and I was an atheist in the Chicago area, but I wasn't really public. You know, I never really like went out and said, "Hey, everybody, I'm an atheist," like I do now. What is the atheism community like? The free thought community like here in the Chicago area?
Well, I would say it's a little more disjointed than we'd probably like. There's a lot of different groups, many through Facebook and also meetup.com.
Now, do you think that's a function of geography, of being spread out, or do you think that is because for every opinion, you know, for every issue, there's four opinions, so we need four groups?
I think it's a little bit due to geography, because a lot of the groups are, you know, in the suburbs,
yeah,
and there's some in different parts of the city that, if you live in the city, you know how hard it is to get, say, from the north side to the south side to go to something.
Yes. Yes, I do.
So, you know, if it's an hour away on a bus, you probably want to meet up with people that are really close to you,
right,
if you don't have a car. So, and a lot due to the suburbs, huge, huge area, 3 million people.
You are really surprised at how big the suburbs are.
I was, and this was a reintroduction to toll roads, a little flash to my past here.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things that we saw in Oklahoma, actually, was Oklahoma is geographically hugely spread out. And Oklahoma Atheists, as a meetup group, has sort of taken on everything that's happening in the geographic area. And they have no problem with listing four different meetup events happening at one day, because it's this pocket over here in the west and this pocket over here in the north.
Yeah.
This was something I was noticing, and it sounds like the way Chicago Atheists is put together is a lot like the way we exist in the Seattle area, except I imagine the scale is slightly larger for you guys. But when I go to, when I went to Oklahoma City, when I went to Phoenix, when I went to, what's the other place?
Let's say we went to Orange County. When we're in
Sacramento,
Tucson.
Yep. Yeah, see, I've been on the road a little too long. there seems to be sort of a community strength through adversity. These are places that it's just this little, sometimes it's this little dot of ecumenical thinking and free thought in this soup of Christian substrate. And that seems to make for a very vibrant community. I'm looking for an exception to that. So the other thing that you do that we've talked about is it's now the Secular Party of America, and it was formerly the National Atheist Party?
Yes. The National Atheist Party was started by Troy Boyle back in March of 2011. It was a different name. It was a secular type name, and I'm sorry, I'm blanking on it.
That's okay.
You know, in that summer, there was a meetup here in Chicago, a picnic for, hey, let's get this together and start getting this rolling. So I went to that picnic here in Chicago in 2011 in August, and it kind of just started from there. And eventually, the last couple of years, we've gone to the Reason Rally.
Yeah.
And as sort of a part of the meetup group, went to the Reason Rally and just discussed that. But
so we had an episode about the National Atheist Party probably about 6 or 7 months ago now.
That's something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and we interviewed the guy who founded it. And
Troy Boyle, yeah.
Yeah, and about 2 weeks later, he was out.
Yeah, yeah. I was as surprised about that as you are.
Okay.
Are you familiar at all with the impetus behind the name change from National Atheist Party to Secular Party of America?
Yeah, I believe that, well, there was a vote, and I guess I've been put forward that people thought, well, you know, it'd be a little more inclusive of, people are just put off by the name, mm-hmm. and nothing's really changing with the party, but just the name.
Okay.
And trying to be more inclusive to people's initial reactions to that name.
I know even atheists struggled with saying, why do we need a political party that says mm-hmm. specifically atheist?
Being one of them, yeah. I mean, for me, it was originally, there are other parts of the world that have religiously oriented, you know, political parties, mm-hmm. but that's only been occasionally a thing in the United States, and it's usually associated with parts of the U.S. history that I'm a little less than sanguine about, I guess. So to have a religious political party or a religious stance political party,
yeah.
If I'm being more precise, we kind of sat on the National Atheist Party episode for a while because we never knew exactly what to do with it.
Sure.
And then we had the interview, and it was actually really cool, and he actually kind of changed our minds about a lot of it, because it wasn't about atheism, it was about secularism. And it seems like the name change sort of puts it back in line with what it's more aligned with your goals than the National
right.
Atheist Party.
Yeah, I agree. And I was a little bit apprehensive at first about the name change, just because I felt like it was almost giving in to
right.
public opinion. But I think in general, the original title was just to kind of get a visceral reaction from people, maybe, originally. Yeah. You don't want to have a National Christian Party for a political movement. So even though atheist doesn't have anything to do with trying to insert religion into laws, it does sound
yeah.
like it. So changing to Secular Party of America, I think, just kind of brings in people who just want to make sure that there's no religion in laws.
But the other thing is that was important to me and Mike is that there is no political party or group out there that has really secularism and skepticism as a core value. Not,
sure.
not the Democrats, not the Republicans, not the Greens, certainly not the Constitution Party. And so to have that option out there is interesting. Now I kind of have to ask the difficult question. Have you guys run any candidates yet?
No.
Okay.
No. The first step was just to get kind of a group of people together,
mm-hmm.
same like-minded.
Yeah.
And I think eventually, and I'm not one of the officers yet, but I've just been involved with it. So I think eventually, within the next couple of years, the original goal was to try to run somebody for, you know, alderman
right.
or something like that, smaller, to just get the name out there and get people to realize, hey, these aren't crazy people or these aren't, you know, scary people. It's just, you know, here's this party, and get it kind of legitimized that way
right.
first, and then just slowly build towards, you know, eventual.
Because right. even in the Puget Sound area, it's throwing the secular community under the bus, throwing atheists, the godless atheists, under the bus is a cheap vote. Even in a place like Washington, where one person in four is a religious nun. And so having somebody out there goes, hey, wait a minute, you know, actually in the race, I think that is, especially in the races for local positions, that could be a real game changer, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. And I think that originally with some of our past officers, the point that a lot of them tried to make and went to see candidates were to, was to ask, what are you going to do for, you know, atheist voters or secular voters? And, you know, there's been YouTube videos recorded of people asking that and mm-hmm. the responses. And I think that that's good to kind of catch people off guard and say, you know, what would you do for this type of voter? Because we're out there.
Yeah.
And just to have that Secular Party of America, well, have it be out there as a name and to just get it in the minds of people.
I think it is really important when you have more visibility. I mean, Sam, you talk about not just the free thought community and the free thought movement, but the atheism visibility movement,
right?
Where you have people in a political sphere, in an educational sphere, in a community sphere, where you come together and it looks like church and it's not church. When you're active in your local politics, when you're there at your universities, and I love just seeing all these pieces coming together.
I do too. And another thing that I think is important, and this is something we're going to have to tackle as soon as we get back into town, but there is a school board election coming up.
There is a school board election coming up in a few of our cities. One that particularly caught my interest. There is one candidate who is has a long storied history and was president of the teachers union. And the two other candidates, one is a principal at a Christian school, and one of them, his goal in life is to raise a good God fearing 12-year-old son.
So how do you intend on teaching the science of evolution in the classroom?
There you go.
See what happens. That's usually we've actually always done that. It's never been on the show, but like when I had an office in Old Tacoma, the road 30th was kind of a major thoroughfare for people who have money. So politicians like to hang out there, strangely enough. And so there was somebody for school board, and we'd walk up there and go, so, you know, we're interested in education, or sometimes you'd actually mention that you were an educator. And we go, well, how do you feel about teaching science? Or how do you feel about teaching evolution?
The question I liked particularly was, how do you feel on medically accurate sexual health education? And it was wonderful because the two answers I got from the two women that were both campaigning were, this is a non-issue. Of course we teach medically accurate sexual health education at the middle schools and high schools. And human reproduction is part of a curriculum. And we want educated students that are healthy. And that was really, really, you know, very, very good to hear that.
So to bring it back to Chicago Atheists, so you guys do, you know, you had Ray Kurzweil in, you had astrophysicists in. did I get that right?
Not Ray Kurzweil, but he was speaking about Ray Kurzweil.
Speaking about Ray Kurzweil. Okay, sorry.
I wish, though.
So one of the things we're discovering is sort of a need out there for to move beyond the sort of bar and lecture set that sort of defines the modern atheist movement, because that's, you know, that's what that's my part of the movement. I like bars. I like the lecture circuit. I like listening to people talk about science and other stuff. But there is a need out there, and this is a sort of a need I think buildings like this and the ethical culture movement can serve, is sort of building it into a more of a wider community, like having parenting groups. Is that something that Chicago Atheists or the groups that make up Chicago, that Voltron into Chicago Atheists, are working on?
Well, I hope so. We're kind of slowly snowballing to get people together and to try to combine some of these groups to get at least cross post, so we can get everybody in the Chicago area to know that these are available. And I agree that that would be great to have some parenting, secular parenting type meetups. I'll be a parent soon in December, so
I'm
looking forward. Thank you. So I'm looking forward to things like that, and like Parenting Beyond Belief type things. I don't know if you have read that book, but
that was Dale McGowan, a past guest, I think, wrote the Parenting Beyond Belief book.
Yeah, and he's coming out with a new one soon. I think that he's that was a collection of different people writing. So so things like that, I think it'd be great to get together with parenting.
One of the things I noticed also in the Chicago area with the little meetups is you've got a Hispanic American Freethinkers sort of chapter with a Hispanic or Spanish-speaking atheists meetup group, and I believe one of our past guest Mandisa Thomas with Black Nonbelievers Inc. has a Chicago chapter getting started up. So it's seeing some disparate groups, but I think sometimes when you have that diversity, you can find people, you know, you can find your own people and being non-theistic in a way that suits you. Do you do any of the other kinds of things?
Well, I'm a member of Chicagoland Atheists, just a Facebook group that kind of meet up to enjoy each other's company. But
so am I.
Really?
Yeah.
Great. So we meet up for different holidays and different things like that, but we try to cross-post through there and through a lot of other different groups on Facebook and Meetup, just to get everybody that is possible to come to different things, and also just as a social.
Now, what's structure? The holiday meetups that you do? I mean, do atheists get together on Easter?
Well, we have a member named Holly whose birthday is on Christmas, and she likes to do a Hollymas instead of Christmas, and so we get together and do heathen type things. We have Heathster instead of Easter.
Love it, love it.
So things like that, just fun get-togethers, and to discuss, you know, just We went to the Reason Rally. A lot of people from Chicago and atheists went to the Reason Rally. So it's not just to get together for fun things.
Right.
But, I mean, obviously that was fun.
But, I like getting together for fun things.
Yeah.
Just to get people to relate to each other and to be able to meet up for different things.
I like the Heathster. I know on the West Coast we have a family in the Puget Sound that hosts a Wester since not Easter.
Go. Yeah, that's a real groaner for me, to be honest.
I like the puns.
So in Easter, it's also Easter.
Yes, I think so.
So to find Chicago Atheists, I assume just go to Meetup and search for Chicago Atheists.
You can search for the Secular Chicago in Meetup, and it'll pull up through their searches. So Secular Chicago.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. When we come back, we're going to take some questions from the audience.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul, save the universe!
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Root.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
Billy, I'm a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We are still on our tour in Skokie, Illinois, at the Chicago Ethical Humanist Society, and now is the time on Ask an Atheist when we take questions from the people in the audience.
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Ray.
Hi, Ray.
And it's sort of a question, but a comment also. You've mentioned Dale McGowan, who's written several books, one of which I've read recently by the title of Atheism for Dummies.
I think that's his most recent book.
Yeah.
And I found myself a little bit unhappy with the book, and I commented on Amazon about this, basically because in the book he seems to equate atheism with agnosticism and humanism. And there's one sentence in there, I think he says humanism is the heart of atheism, something to that effect, which is fine. I am happy with humanism, I am happy with agnosticism, yeah, but I'm an atheist. And I expect a book written about atheism for dummies distinguish the differences between atheism and these other things. So I guess it's a comment, but I'd like to hear if you have opinions on that topic. Thank you.
Thank you. Atheism is our statement of belief. Our statement of knowledge is agnosticism, is because we can't prove that there is no God. Now, I take that a step further and think that there's proof out there that the gods most people believe in don't exist. I think we can find that proof. But other types of gods we don't have proof of, existence or non-existence. But we believe that there is no God and we act like there is no God, so we are atheists. For a statement of what I do believe in, that's when I mention humanism, because I am a humanist. But that's not universal in the atheist community, so I actually would take issue with the statement that humanism is the heart of atheism. There's a lot of atheists in my neck of the woods that don't call themselves humanists and, in fact, get mad when I suggest that they are.
You know, one thing is that it could be really kind of hard to write a whole book on something that really only has a two-word definition. So what I would anticipate, and I have not read Dale's most recent book, what I would anticipate the sort of the conflating humanism and atheism is that here's what most atheists, you know, get their, here's where most atheists get their morals from. Here's where the face of atheism, what it looks like. And agnosticism, if you say, I have no knowledge of whether there's a God or not, I don't really act like there's a God, religion doesn't play a big part in my life, you're effectively and pragmatically an atheist. And so I think the Dummies series is a very accessible thing. You have everything from computer repair for dummies to cats for dummies. So atheism for dummies, that's going to have a good draw. And I think at some point you sort of are speaking to a common denominator of what a general general consumer of popular books, going into any bookstore saying, what's how can I learn about this, you're gonna be writing a little bit to the common denominator where everyone thinks that atheists are only 1% of the population and this is what they all do, they're all Satanists or something like that. Say, no, actually there's a much larger slice of the American populace that is effectively atheistic, and here's what it might look like.
For the third seat, we actually have a panel of people. Anybody want to take a stab at this one?
I just had a thought. If there was an atheist mega church, what would it look like? And what statement of non-faith?
Prize electronics.
And what statement of non-faith would you have to sign to enter? My feeling about humanism is it's the belief in the inherent worth of humans.
Okay, thank you very much, but I'm still an atheist. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
I think I am too.
Can I comment real quick?
Oh, absolutely.
Go ahead, Brian.
I was just going to say that I think that humanist is more of an active position and atheist is more of passive, or just it's not really anything. It's just kind of, I don't believe in this.
So next question, please.
My name is Vicky. And growing up Lutheran, I was terrified of death. I think it was partly triggered by that prayer just before bed, now I lay me down to sleep, ending, watch over me throughout the night and wake me with the morning light, figuring if the Lord didn't feel like waking me, I just wouldn't. And I don't know what my mother said to comfort me, and as a childless atheist, I've never had that talk with a child, but some of you are parents, and I was wondering, how you handled the death talk and what you might have find comforting to share with a child.
Well, I think somebody who's a parent might want to speak up first.
Steve or Lisa, how did you talk with your children about death?
Well, I don't think we really had a problem with that. Again, I say my kids are college age now, but they were never instilled with this great fear of death, which I think is sort of inherent in most religious beliefs, that there's something terrible that's bound to happen. I think it's just acknowledged. And I think if you don't instill that fear of hell and heaven and things like this and Judgment Day, eventually I think it comes out naturally in the conversation that you were born and someday you'll die and there's a beginning and there's an end. And I think if they have the proper background of the basically critical thinking, humanist beliefs and things, they find that's quite acceptable. And we can emphasize what we all believe, which is that this is the life that's important. The one that comes after is certainly unknowable at best, but we make the best of the life we have. And I think if you raise kids with that sort of attitude, I don't think you end up having a problem in the end.
Yeah, I confess to fudging Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy along the way. I did tell those lies for a while, but I never did fudge about heaven and hell and that stuff. And I can remember very clearly when I was a child, all of a sudden realizing I was going to die and crying. And I remember to this day screaming and crying and saying I don't want to die. And my mom saying, "Oh, Lisa, you're not going to die soon."
I'm not a parent yet, but I will be soon. And I think, as far as Santa and the Easter Bunny type thing, I think that those white lies can be learning experiences where you can say, well, here's something that youth thinks true, but here, and they find out maybe on their own that it's not. And then you can say, hey, you figured it out, and so it can be kind of a correlation to, and religion too can be that way.
We've heard a lot of people will say, yeah, I started questioning God and I started questioning religion as soon as I found out that, it's mom that puts my quarter under my pillow.
I think there's an opportunity there. In my house, my mom did the Santa Claus things, and I don't think my dad was ever particularly comfortable with it. So he would play along, but really ineffectively. And that worked real well, because nobody had to tell me that Santa Claus didn't exist. It was pretty obvious from what was going on that Santa Claus didn't exist. So it gave me, it was sort of a way, I think this was unintentional, but it was sort of a way to help me build up my skepticism, build up the smell test for me. So I think it was important.
Hello, my name is Kimberly Vill, and I am the host of Black Free Thinkers Podcast.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hi, Kimberly.
Yes, and we have six shows. We have six shows signed on with us now, and I'm also the executive director of Black Nonbelievers of Chicago, which is an affiliate, not a chapter of Black Nonbelievers, Inc. So I just wanted to thank you guys for having us out here. And as you all know, this community is growing, and we're starting to see more diversity. So where do you stand on intersectionality and social justice?
Ooh, where do we as radio hosts, where do we as
humanists, free thinkers, atheists, what have you?
I'm psyched about it. I mean, I'm a Spanish speaker, and I did not grow up speaking Spanish, and I see in a lot of the Spanish speaking communities there is a lot of pressure to maintain allegiance, because Spanish speakers and people of Latin American heritage in the U.S. are a minority, and there's a lot of judgments faced by someone who is different from the dominant social substrate. And it's really hard to be an atheist in that respect, and to say, yeah, I'm an atheist, because, well, you may have your Catholic brethren that are there, or increasingly actually the evangelical movements going into Latin America and being pervasive within the Spanish speaking community. So I see that when you have, a lot of people say, well, why do you need a separate group? Why don't you just come to the humanist meetup? And it's like, well, you may be facing different things, and people will have really different experiences from someone who grew up in a moderate, reformed Jewish background and then goes to be a school teacher. I mean, what do I necessarily know about that? If someone can relate to another person that shares their experience, it can really support someone that is facing that kind of difficulty.
For me, becoming active in the atheism community and becoming an atheist activist was kind of difficult, because I felt like I had to put down things that I cared about quite a bit more than atheism. I feel like I had to, it felt like I was abandoning, the social justice stuff, a marriage equality, racial equality, all that stuff. I was like, this is stuff that really matters to me. And now I'm backing out of it and becoming an atheist, and I feel like it felt like a sense of abandoning, and I didn't like that. But then, for most recent example, one of my favorite examples is Referendum 74 in Washington State, which was for marriage equality. Because I'm an active atheist activist, I had the opportunity to do things for that movement that I never would have had before. I raised thousands of dollars for Referendum 74. We had an online telethon. We had a little bit of a fight, but the fight ended well. So we doubled the amount we collected for Referendum 74. So my activity in the atheism visibility movement has made me a much better participant in other social justice movements. And I'm really excited about it. It's one of the things I'm most happy about.
Well, I'd just like to add on there, too. We had the previous discussion about sort of atheism versus humanism. And this is sort of, I think, one aspect of it, that atheism is, of course, it's a lack of belief in God. But you sort of need to go beyond that, too. And humanism tends to be then that active commitment to basically do something to make the world a better place. Now, social justice is one of these difficult things. I mentioned some of the things that the ethical culture movement had done in the early years, frankly working in a lot of areas that government to some degree has taken over now.
Right.
It's also one of those difficult things that as a society, we always feel like we should be doing more in those areas. It's somewhat difficult. We all have limited time, as you're alluding to. You sort of pick and choose. We certainly are proud of the sort of platforms we have that explore all sorts of different areas. We've had some very significant platforms that are educational in that area. But it's also true that as an organization, we're somewhat limited to, we are a 501c3 religious organization. And so unlike the Catholics or the Mormons, we're limited in how much political activity we can do as an organization.
Right.
But certainly as individuals, we can sort of enlighten ourselves and give ourselves support and really try to work in the social justice areas.
Yeah, I wanted to know how, Kimberly, you sort of are approaching that within the Chicago area.
Well, in the Chicago area here, We just joined up with Black Skeptics Group out of Los Angeles, and I was there last weekend, and we gave away 5 scholarships. 4 scholarships for $1,000 and another scholarship for $500 for people or young folks that were normally marginalized. So these were members of the LGBTQ community, homeless children, children that were in a foster care system. So that's what we're doing, and we're looking to expand that program from Los Angeles to Chicago next year, as well as a STEM project that we're working on. So we're just asking everybody to, you know, bear with us and to support us and to motivate us. And we are taking donations at blackskeptics@gmail.com, and just specify what you would like that to go towards. So if you want it to go towards the scholarship programs, we're taking donations. And that's Dr. Hutchinson, Dr. Sakivu Hutchinson.
Okay. Is that the PayPal address? Is that how that works?
Yes, sir.
Oh,
blackskeptics@gmail.com.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's...
That is such an amazing thing that I've been seeing with the scholarship program, saying, hey, you know what, there's specifically this contingent of the United States population that is dedicated to growing critical thinkers, to growing, you know, skeptical thinkers, you know, and amongst young people that may not have had that opportunity ordinarily. And I'm really excited to say this is totally new to me, that I'm seeing expanding out of the greater LA area. It's as an educator, that just really just warms my warms my heart.
It'll be good. So next question, please.
Hi, my name's Matt, and I'm an atheist, by the way. Very proud atheist. Yeah, I'm out of the closet. But I have really a problem when you guys say atheist community, because I think atheist community are totally separate things. They're not even close. I can't come together in believing what I don't believe in. Yeah, I don't want the government to control me. I don't want to be squished. But I went to one of my ex-students' funeral the other day, and it's a Catholic place, and they happened to be Indian, so it's Indian community, and there were 1,000 people there. And they were together, and they were pulling together, and they had a much bigger commitment than you can ever get by not believing in something. This place here believes in something. We join together. We don't have a meetup. Meetup says, I'm going to meet up, then I'm going to leave. I have Facebook friends, and I have real friends. And I don't see atheism going anywhere until you guys really form groups like this Ethical Society or something similar. We didn't have a scientist talking. We had Steve Joelstrom and his mom playing a piano together. And that was more cementing and more close, you know, just from the heart. And atheism seems to need something from the heart. And until you can replace what religion gives, we're not going anywhere.
Matt, that is a comment that's frequent amongst atheists. And then there are a lot of atheists that will say, no, I don't want that thing. I don't want the piano playing. I don't want the science lecture. I don't want the humanist celebrant wedding. I just want to do my own atheistic thing. I think sometimes when we say the atheist community, it is communities of non-believers. And we had Lisa earlier in a segment that say, I don't identify as an atheist. It's not a label that speaks to me. But I think as sort of a sometimes we end up using atheist or atheist community as a catch-all phrase for someone who lives in a way that is without God and without religion.
I think you have to look, there are multiple variables that turns a community into a community. And one of the things is a shared set of beliefs. And just like you're talking about with humanism and atheism may not provide that. But I think what's building the atheism community right now, honestly, is the other thing that'll build the community. And that's one of exclusion. We are a community because we're being excluded from other parts of life. That we are a target for a lot of people. We're an easy target for a lot of people, not for violence, but you know we're easily to talk about rhetorically. You know, we're easy to say that we're bad, and I think that for when somebody draws a line in the sand like that, everybody that's on the other side of that line, even if they didn't draw that line, are suddenly going to find themselves in a community. And I think that's where we're at right now. And I think to discount that being a community really, really sort of takes the wind out of our sails about what we can do now that we're together. I think that may have been what brought everybody together, and now we're trying to figure out what the things that we do agree on. One of the things that most of the people in the modern atheism movement agree on is scientific skepticism. That's great. That's something you can build a community on. One of the things that is very common is belief in people. You know, that belief changes from place to place. Some of us believe the humanist principles. I'm definitely one of those. There are other people who believe in something close but not the same, and we're making common cause over that. I think we also have to start doing things that we have to start doing things like this. There's the, you know, there's the ethical culture movement. Sanderson Jones, we recently did an episode on, is starting something called the Sunday Assembly, which is which basically has no ideology whatsoever. They're just getting together in a room and trying to build a community and become friends with each other.
You have Jerry DeWitt, a past guest on our show,
exactly.
Doing his church, his non-God church and congregation in Lake Charles, Louisiana.
I think the Field of Dreams rule applies a little bit. We have to build it so they will come.
Start building. I know it's next word.
Yes, and someone in our audience says, and we did.
Yeah,
you certainly
did. We're a little bit farther behind than you guys are.
My name is Tom. Now, this is not a question as much as a plug, if I may.
Okay.
The question had come up from the panel about other free thought groups in the Chicago area, and there is now a chapter of the Freedom From Religion Foundation here in the Chicago area, the Metropolitan Chicago chapter. And I just wanted to make you aware of that. We've been together for about a year now, and we have over about 50 members here in the Chicago area and about 125 in our general mailing list on our database. So we are in the process of getting ourselves organized, but we have been an official chapter since October of 2012.
So if people want to find you, where do they go?
Well, we have a website. It's www.FFRFMCC.org.
Great.
Yeah, I'm actually a member of that.
Oh, nice.
So we had Dan Barker speak a little while ago.
Well, Dan Barker was actually here at the Ethical Humanist Society last September, and we had a reception for him. If you're looking for a good bar afterward, there's Bar Louie,
okay.
Which is where we had our reception.
I think that's where our post show will end up today.
Okay, great.
And one thing I want to invite anybody in the other secular communities in Chicago, once you start having kids, Brian, is one thing that the Ethical Culture Societies have is a Sunday school. And it's where we bring up little critical thinkers to then join meetups like yours someday. So, I mean, it would be wonderful if all of these other secular communities could organize as a place for families to, you know, bring their kids as an alternative to religious Sunday schools.
And in the meantime, you can check out our website, ethicalhuman.org.
I was working up to that.
Okay. Well, I got there first.
No problem.
But that'll tell you quite a bit about us. There's a nice little 5-minute video that's sort of introductory. There are also links there to our YouTube site, where we have several of our past talks here, including one by Dan Barker, Massimo Paglucci, Chris Mooney. I've all spoken here. So check us out and come visit us sometime, too.
Absolutely.
One last comment. As an atheist skeptic, I believe that no one is driving the bus. As an ethical humanist, I believe it's our obligation to try to grab the wheel to avoid catastrophe.
Ooh, I love that metaphor.
Yes.
It's amazing, Joseph. Boy, does that really summarize our experience here.
I think we just found the end of the show. That's a great way to... So thank you very much, Lisa, Steve, and Brian, for being on the show with the organizations you're involved with again.
Secular Meetup.
Okay. And thank you very much to the Chicago Ethical Humanist Society. What is that website one more time?
ethicalhuman.org.
And we're on Facebook and Meetup.
Very good. And that's all the time we have for today. My name is Sam. With me here is Becky, Lisa, Steve, and Brian. We are in Skokie at the Chicago Ethical Humanist Society. Go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Click on the shiny red candy bit like button. Give us a message. You can also leave us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. Next week, we're in South Dakota. Talk to you next week.